I think I will be okay with it failing.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Wombat Radio. This morning we're speaking with Trish Wood. Patricia Wood?
Patricia Wood.
Patricia Wood.
Yeah.
Hi, Trish.
Hi. Either or.
What are you busy with?
Many things. What am I busy with? Doing a master's, I guess, is probably the thing I meant to be busy with.
And that takes up all your waking hours?
We also need to work out about, like, flyovers. Is this a flyover?
No, if you feel like you can still... Maybe you just need to talk louder.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm doing a master's in dance at Macquarie Uni. And I've been doing some anthropology as well. Am I having technical difficulty? No, we're not. Okay, great. Yeah. Okay.
So what does that mean?
It means I'm writing a 10,000-word thesis, and I'm making something.
Like a dance.
A dance, yes, a performance of some description that I'm still trying to work out what that is. But it's fun in the process of finding it out. I'm kind of working with Lepecki, who's this performance theorist. He has this theory about the body being an archive and that it only works when it's enacted, like you have to be doing for it to be working.
And it doesn't... Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Because that's when it's... Because in the viewing of the activation of the archive is when it is real and useful?
So I think there is that. Uh-huh. And that kind of feeds into, the ephemerality of dance. But I think there's also something about the embodied experience of the person that's doing.
Yeah.
And how they create or curate their memories and interactions and everything, belief systems, morals, how that all feeds into the action.
Yeah. And how specific the recreation has to be for it to still carry through what's important.
Yeah, maybe. I think there's... Well, I'm kind of in two modes about this. I think there is an interest in being specific and paying attention, but I also think there's something really important about letting go and it's almost in the initiation that is, like, why you're doing it is sort of more important than what you do.
Yeah.
And then I guess I'm kind of framing it in this idea of a reenactment. So, and I was listening to one of your podcasts yesterday and it was talking about, I think it was with Sean, about how this kind of transition from dancer to maker and what that is. And that maybe what I had this moment of like, maybe that's what I'm trying to do, is actually work out what I'm interested in making. And this thing of archiving is a way of me to kind of digest all the sort of influences and people. And I have this thought that maybe our bodies are quite colonized and that, through this sort of reenactment and just interest in paying attention, you're able to distill what it is that you're interested in. But whether that's interesting for anyone else to watch is the next question.
Yeah, right. Because perhaps our shared physicality is also colonized, and maybe that's a more universal set of movement vocabulary to work from and choreograph for if what you want to do is decisively make something that people watch and will benefit from watching or will engage with watching or something. But then also maybe there's faith to just be had in the human experience.
Totally. But I also think there's... You have to set it up right, though, because I'm all up for things failing, as I mentioned earlier. But you have to give whoever's watching the permission to be there with you, to, like, not be, like, co-present, maybe.
Uh-huh.
They don't have to feel responsible unless you actually want them to.
Uh-huh.
But they have to be with you. You don't want to...
Yeah.
Get rid of them.
No, you don't want to make the audience redundant.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are dance styles that are.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wonder if they began in an era where where life was far more participatory rather than spectator-based.
What ones are you talking about?
Just, I don't know.
Because it might be in the way that it's actually been recorded and the transmission of that experience to the next generation.
Uh-huh.
There might be something lost in that.
Uh-huh.
Rather than...
Well, I imagine, say, a barn dance that you would do because you're getting together to dance, or a heel-toe polka.
Yeah.
Versus the Australasian Ballroom Dancing Championships.
Okay.
And that there's... It's almost the weekly sport that you play with your friends versus going to the game that you've paid money to watch the professionals enact. And it's the same game, the same rules, but somehow the stakes are bigger or the skills are more, because then it makes it more watchable. I don't know. I just wonder how that applies to dance, that spectatorship, like the culture of spectating or participating.
But in that example, I just assumed that the kids that the person that did the smaller game was the spectator at the
yeah, right. And it's not the other way around. The professionals don't come and watch the community
sometimes
games.
Sometimes they do, but yeah, only when they're paid, probably. There's some sort of incentive.
Yeah, right.
But yeah,
so
but
we should be going to far more
Stedfords.
Yeah, or before that even, like. The 5-minute run through at the end of a Sunday class at a suburban dance school.
That's the
show.
Well, it is for them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
How you feel you're going with your transition?
It's a process.
It is a process. And it's not an absolute process or a final process.
Never.
Hopefully it's an expansive accumulation rather than a transition.
Well, I think you have to let go of some things.
Okay.
What
are you letting go of?
Oh, what am I letting go of? I'm letting go of hiding behind this idea of not knowing. Or it's okay to not know. I do agree with that, but I think there's also, I have a tendency to be the default.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that's just my personality rather than a dancer thing.
I don't know.
Yeah. No, what else am I? I don't know.
I know what you mean, because as a dancer, often you get to just outsource knowing to the director or the choreographer or the marketer or the audience.
Yeah.
If they applause, then you don't need to worry about the show. Because they know and it was good.
Yeah. Well, maybe I don't agree with that then. I don't know. Maybe it is an have to let go of a couple of things to let more space in. I don't know, actually.
Don't worry about it.
Dish me.
You don't need to know.
No. Don't. I'm going to have more tea. Do you want more tea?
Yeah. So what's the... I imagine that, like... Because you're nearly at the end of this.
Yeah.
And
yep, I am. Sort of.
I imagine that where you started is very different to where you are now.
Yeah, that's true. Yep. Yeah, well, I kind of just arrived back in Sydney and needed something to do.
And I thought, maybe I'll just go and...
Well, it was very appealing. Mm. The idea of having a scholarship and space and hang out with Julianne and propose something that is somehow free from funding. So you can kind of suspend those
those cogs.
Yeah, but then I'm actually sitting in a much more dense lot of cogs that I don't have experience of. Uh-huh. And so learning on the job of how to negotiate that and navigate that. So that's been quite eye-opening.
And is there an idea that dance is inherently an anthro consideration, or do these things often sit apart? Like, I imagine in most, because I don't know a lot about anthropology, but I do imagine that dance being a part of most societies is also a part of a lot of,
it
mentioned in anthropological studies of societies.
But it's also not the what's mentioned most.
Uh-huh.
So it's part of it, but it's not. There is quite a lot of research done on it now, but I think there's still more to do. And because of all this phenomenological stuff that came out, then that sort of created. So this guy, Merleau-Ponty, he kind of, I think he wasn't an anthropologist, I don't think, but he kind of spent a lot of time thinking about, maybe everyone who listens should just go Google him, but just about the insight, what it is to experience things. Yeah. Human experience and how complex it is and how interrelated it is and what is the language around that, how do we communicate that.
And he wasn't a dancer or an anthropologist?
I don't think so. No, he definitely wasn't a dancer. Otherwise you would know him. But he's pretty famous. He's really hard to read, really hard, but
so
everyone
excellent
talks
communicator
yeah. Well, maybe it's just really hard to communicate. But I went to this talk in Wollongong by this performance theorist, Peggy Phelan, who's amazing. And she was talking about using these kind of performance study modes of thinking and communicating with medical research, and how some of the survivors who come back from war and in terms of post-traumatic stress and stuff, but she was looking at the gap between this idea of being a survivor, being their physiology being changed, and then how the narrative that they fit back into doesn't fit the person, and is there a way to kind of narrate differently their experience.
No, I was reading about, and I don't remember who I was reading, but they were talking about the self-generated narrative as the best counter to post-traumatic stress syndrome, and that if in wars generations ago you would have up to months on a ship with all the rest of your team coming back from a war zone to tell and retell all of the events that happened to each other until they're no longer accurate, but they are the narrative that you can live with the memory of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And by the time you get back, you have you've compressed and sanded all the sharp edges of this thing, and then also assimilated is the wrong word, but absorbed that into who you are and can now go on to be.
Yeah.
But the modern day war is stepping on a landmine and 12 hours later you can be at home.
Yeah.
In your home country. Healing.
Yeah.
But dealing on a totally different social framework.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And there is a difference between disease and illness, and kind of understanding the different narratives that go with each of those. Because I think disease is a pathological entity, supposedly.
Okay.
That's what they talked about.
Illness can just be any kind of mal.
Illness is the person dealing with the symptoms. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's very different.
So the person is at the center of illness.
Yeah. And that our relationship to it.
Okay.
And how you can try and shift that. And then how can the medical teams sort of support
take that into account when they're treating?
Yeah, and under so much pressure.
Yeah, like, of course.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, the disease pathogen throwing its bombs and then the medical profession throwing their bombs and the person in the middle not being considered at that.
Yeah. Wow. I think it's really interesting, really important, especially, yeah, in those sort of vulnerable places.
Mm. Feel like you're at a different place than when you started with embodied experience? Because already being a highly trained and able dancer, your experience is embodied.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, aren't we all? We all have a body. We're all embodied, right? So it's just about...
Who's we?
Everyone.
Who's we all?
Every single person in the world.
I don't know. I think...
But isn't that just like a
gradient
shift?
Or something?
Yeah.
Maybe. I think there's a disconnect.
Yeah, I think there is, but I don't think it's necessary.
No, I don't think it's necessary, but I do think that it is systemic to some institutions and cultures.
Yeah.
It's built into the... Like, a book that I've been reading, Beyond Mateship, that I was talking to you about, is talking about the swagmen of a few hundred years ago Australia.
Mm.
And... It seems to me that it is built in and encouraged to be disconnected from your body because of the physical hardships that you're facing.
Mm. But that's a conscious, embodied experience.
To disembody.
To choose not to. Like, I think we have to rethink this idea that to be embodied, you have to feel every single thing at every moment and, you know, understand each sensation. It's like, well, it's actually about the choice.
Yeah, right. I see. So then I would be proposing that a lot of times we don't even make a choice.
Yeah, but we
just inherit our relationship with our
selves. Or maybe that the context in which we're working within
shapes
the stimulus is
definitely
too.
So
yeah, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
But I remember I was in this conference maybe like 3 months ago, and my friend is doing a master's as well, and hers is in more about like sound soundtracks in movies and sort of the embodied experience of the audience watcher or the spectator, and
in response to the sound.
And she was just talking about it, and then she played this little clip that was just a sound, and the audience was not only people from like my department, but like just philosophy and ancient history and English lit and, you know, all kind of humanities, but different. And this guy said that when he listened to that, he felt nothing. And I was like, yeah, that's great. Like, that's a response. But in feeling nothing, that's still, there's still more in that.
Do you think a woman would have said that?
Maybe.
I wonder if it's coincidental that it was a male.
I think it depends.
Was he Australian?
Yeah, he was a philosophy student. Looked like he... I don't know.
And I don't know about philosophy, but I'm going to imagine that it has a lot to do with thinking in the brain.
Yes, and not much moving. I know. And when I looked at him, I thought that too.
So I can't help but think that that's a disembodiment.
Yeah, but that's still... What is my argument? I guess I...
Or a hierarchy, at the very least.
It's a hierarchy.
That in the circles of his thought and discussion and engagement and where he lives, there's a hierarchy of mind above...
Body.
And mind not even being brain. Mind is in the constructed mind.
Yeah. But then it still sits within a body. So there has to be a conscious, like, exactly, prioritizing.
Yeah.
But that is the process.
Yeah.
And I think once people realize that that is the choice, then they will choose the other option. Maybe.
Maybe. I really like the idea. Like the general basis is I've come to this conclusion by thinking about things. And if only everybody takes a moment and thinks about these things, they will come to the same conclusion. Because I have the same hope about empathy or about kindness or about...
That if
everyone just takes another breath or another second or another moment before they beep the horn or get angry or be outraged, then perspective will fall into place.
Be calmer.
And
softer.
And that will work en masse to make a calmer, softer
city. It'd be wonderful.
City.
Do you want my tea?
Yeah, hit me up. But I don't know. That's the complete idealist in me. I've also come to believe that all of my thinking is so much of my ability to think about things is inherited from the way that I was raised and my experiences thus far.
And yes, but they're conscious choices. I think once you you have the things that you've inherited are up to a point, but then there's a point also in life where you construct. Where you choose who you hang out with, you choose what you think about, you choose whether you want to read or whether you'd rather watch movies or whether you would rather sit in the forest and watch the birds.
I don't disagree that there's a level of personal responsibility. And within that, I wonder how big of a consideration needs to be made to privilege. Even if only I compare it to obesity, at what age is a child's obesity suddenly their responsibility? I don't know the answer to that.
I don't know either.
But there's some kind of...
education.
Experience or mindset or appreciation or...
And maybe if we were all homogenized to, be calm and... breathe more and think about our bodies. Maybe that wouldn't. I wonder. I don't know.
But I mean, I haven't read this book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Oh yeah.
But the whole premise of that book, because I read the blurb, is that there are modes of thinking and ways of seeing the world that. You inherit depending on which class you're raised in. And I don't know. I would like to believe in a true meritocracy and true class mobility within Australia, where you can choose your class and you can go up and down, and or maybe you don't even look at it that way. I wonder where we're at being artists working in the arts. I really wonder what class. If we've side-shifted class, or if we've zoomed ourselves up, or if we've undercut ourselves down.
It depends on how you define... Well, yeah. I think when you look at most artists... It's tricky, isn't it?
Well, I guess this comes back to dance, because we're dancers. Yeah. And then it comes back to anthropology, because we're talking about people and where... And cultures and class and where dance... Where choosing dance... has placed them within a culture and a class.
I can only speak for myself, but I've chosen to live in the most expensive city in Australia and not have that much work, but live a life that with people that I think are interesting and engaging and trying to think about the world a little more and do something conscious.
I wonder if I'm doing anything.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah, I know. But it's got to be... But it's not... I guess the thing is that maybe everybody at one point at least thinks, what am I doing with my life?
Yeah.
But in maybe my situation and people that have a little more time... they're just thinking that thought far more often, and so they're very they're much more comfortable with it. It's not a midlife crisis.
No,
because it's a weekly consideration.
Yeah, but if it's a consideration, then that takes kind of the bite out of it.
Yeah, it's like if you get hit once, it's a big deal, but if you get hit every day,
and it's a conscious choice. I choose this. I choose tea in the sun.
Ah, it's true.
Yeah. Yeah, but I also think when you're talking about, like, what am I doing with my life?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. That's the new premise of the podcast. So what are you doing with your life?
How is this useful? I lost my train of thought.
When I think about this, when I think about what I'm doing with my life.
What I'm doing with my life. I think you have to, well, what I'm slowly learning is that the being in it is much more interesting. So, yeah. So, like, the process of thinking about these things or being, like, not being able to say I've done this and this and this, but the process of engaging with whatever you...
Are you proposing that the breakthrough
yeah.
is that the journey? It's about the journey?
I don't want to say that at all. I'm not going to say that.
Okay.
I'm not going to say it's unique.
No, but I guess it doesn't have to be unique to be important. And it doesn't have to be significant to be important.
No, because it's about the individual.
Mm. Okay.
I think. I'm saying I think
for
a lot
now.
Today.
Well, for now.
For now.
This is what you
today.
Think for now, today.
Tomorrow yeah. I'll be like, Matt, no.
But it's really lucky that...
You get to do that.
That we're even in a situation where you can think something for now, today.
Yeah.
Because there are industries that's not really going to assure the people that you're supposed to be serving.
Mm. Well, I'm not sure I'm serving people. Who are we serving? So I think this is another thing about class, is that I don't feel like I have... to serve anyone.
Mm.
I don't feel that I'm needing to produce something that's worth... Well, maybe I should be. This is actually something that I was thinking about the other day. I was like, maybe I need to think of something that is useful to others more than just making them tea when they come over. You know, like, is there a better skill or a service or a... I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. But I think the idea of service relates to class.
Hmm.
Because I think there are... like...
people to serve.
Yeah. if it's all evolved from serfdom...
Yeah.
Then there are classes that serve other classes.
Yeah.
For their own gain or for social cohesion. But if we are existing in a place where we are not, maybe we're just not of the mindset of contributing, and maybe we really are contributing, I'm not sure.
I think we are. We're in the process of making a great contribution.
Because the process is what it's about.
Well, I kind of... yeah.
I'm in the process of making a great contribution.
Great contribution. I'm just not there yet.
Yeah.
Oh, I sound like a wanker. Sorry, everybody.
Do you want me to edit that part out? Nah, it's staying in. But let me get you back on track.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, dance.
Dance.
Anthro.
Yes, a little bit.
So more like dance in an anthro context, or an anthro setting.
Dance in an anthro... No, that's not what I'm thinking at the moment. In terms of anthropology, I guess I have to be clear that I've only done a couple of subjects in it.
Uh-huh.
That's it. But the reason that I'm interested in anthropology is because I'm interested in understanding more my relationship to a community in the western province of Papua New Guinea. And for me to be able to understand that, I need to read and, well, go, which was really awesome that I got to go. But to understand sort of the inner workings of that, I need to do some anthropology.
Do you want to maybe explain a little bit how...
Which part?
Because we're having this discussion in Sydney, Australia.
Yeah, yeah. Which part do you want me to explain first?
Why you have a relationship at all that then needs to be understood.
Fair call. Because my great great granddad. No, sorry. My great granddad, he lived in Papua New Guinea as part of the war, and my grandmother grew up there. And then I have this theory that sort of instilled a kind of so this is like the 50s and the 40s. My grandmother was able to sort of pack up and move on to very remote islands with my papa. And she came from a certain class where you're not meant to do that. And so I'm quite impressed by her. And then I think my dad grew up on these remote islands, and that made him interested in people that don't belong in Australia. No, that's wrong. Not don't belong, but just... Are you recording?
Recording.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay. So we're back.
So we're back because we're talking about the...
I don't know if I said people of PNG. I just said dad not... Somebody wanting to hang out with people that didn't belong here.
Uh-huh.
Which
uh-huh.
still is
yeah.
bad.
It still is not what you mean.
It's not what I meant.
No, of course. But we want... What we want to...
Oh, wait. We've got to...
What we're going to do is wait for a plane.
Yeah. Do you want more tea?
But if somehow we're talking about systemic racism or institutionalized racism, I don't believe that's what that comment was pointing to.
Like, I guess if you only look at that one comment, then people would perceive that as racist because it's taken out of the context.
Mm.
And perhaps I didn't frame it in a way that comforted everyone listening and myself, that I was culturally aware enough to not fall into that trap.
Yeah.
And I think Australians right now... like it's quite a hot topic with Adam Goods and the booing and how, and there's been all these talks about how Australia is racist without realising.
Yeah,
and then what that
I think that's a fair call. Self-validatorily racist.
Yeah, and how we stop.
Or racist... That. En masse or to a group but not to individuals.
Mm. But you know what I think? I think it's actually up to the leaders to set an example, because otherwise we have to be hyper careful of the way we speak to each other, the way we frame our conversations to make sure everyone realizes that we're okay, whether, you know, and there are varying degrees of that.
Yeah, of course.
But there are some really like important things that could change that would allow the nation to feel a little
cohesive.
Yeah, and like it's going to take a lot more than just like a couple of shifts, but there has to be an initiator. There has to be something, like everyone is gasping for it. Something has to change. And then what is it? Who is it that actually...
But there's been there's been a few staled starts, like...
Constitution.
Well, I'm just talking about the stuff that actually has gone through that hasn't been...
Oh, yeah.
...the breaking of the damn wall of change of sentiment.
Yeah.
Like, there was the change in land rights, and then many years later there was an apology.
Yeah.
A formal apology from the governing...
Yeah.
Colonials.
Yeah.
And like, I guess we all would have hoped that would be...
To carry on, yeah.
That would carry on into individual sentiment and relationship.
Yeah, but I think then maybe those acts are not enough.
No, I wonder what is enough.
Well, there's a few things that you could begin. Mm. Like, we couldn't quite easily... Like, the Constitution is a very, very, very easy way to begin.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we don't teach Aboriginal... culture in schools is a very easy way to begin. the idea of saving the Aboriginal languages and all the support for resources to go into that would be another really easy way for that to begin. The support for Aboriginals to live on their land would be an easy way to begin.
Yeah. It's also tricky because what that looks like is the nations, the Indigenous nations that have land that has not been urbanised.
Mm.
Because there's no way that the city of Sydney is going to give back its CBD.
No, I understand that. I'm talking more about the closures in the Indigenous communities.
Of course, but it's like...
It does open.
It like gets really...
But I think that's the conversation that we actually have to have,
yeah,
right, rather than hide away from it.
Yeah.
And rather than worrying about oil and things, maybe we should concentrate on what we have right now, which is a broken
nation.
And it's super hard. I'm not saying that it's easy, but I don't think Australia's going to go anywhere until we have it. Maybe that's
we just went real big real quick.
Yeah, we did.
Let's come back to
my comment.
Just what you meant, yeah.
I know.
I'm going to cut this in.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the time.
Okay. So I guess all I meant was that my dad and my nana were curious about other cultures that weren't represented in Australia.
Yes. Okay.
That's all. And had the means to go and find out about them.
Say, oh, that's not what I mean, and then cut away to this little conversation,
yeah,
and then cut back to the rest of the thing. If you're comfortable with that, I think it would be far more revealing and interesting and engaging than exactly what you said, like, let's have the conversation.
Yeah.
Let's not pretend that we don't need to be having the conversation.
Yeah.
For fear of getting misheard or read or quoted or misrepresented.
You're right. It's true.
Because I imagine I misrepresent myself at the time, even based on my shoes that I wear.
Yeah, and I guess I'm just hyper-conscious of it because I'm sort of positioning myself within I'm positioning myself within dance. It has this sort of, I keep talking about this anthropology stuff, even though that I'm not an anthropologist. And then I'm dealing with these cultures that I don't really understand. So it's like, how do you take these different ontologies, even though you are interested in them, and you come into them with, like, a genuine curiosity and really do want to engage. I feel like it's, especially within dance, to be putting myself in that position, it brings up a lot of questions because I'm not of those cultures. And I think in dance specifically, there's a real push for the minority or the subaltern to speak for themselves. So why am I deciding that I want to do this?
Yeah.
And I think I'm still okay to do it, but I just have to be aware and also of what I make. Like, so that's another reason why that dance is not really about PNG, because I don't have the support or the means to actually really give it the time and the space to value it. Yeah. Anyway.
It's also just a weird thing to... Not a weird thing, but it's a step to take to view the dance of our own culture as cultural dance.
Yeah, well, it's not... you're talking about me in terms of my mask, what I'm doing this year?
Yeah, like you're still dance. Somehow in the dance of a culture. It just happens to be your culture.
Yeah. But by shifting that focus, then you see it in these very different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I wonder about why I do that, why...
And then I wonder about why.
All of the above. What the hell is she doing?
How is not an issue.
Yeah, I'll make that up.
Great.
What and why? Great.
Okay, Thanks, back. Let's go back to the general thing.
Maybe, yeah. Well, anyway, he was interested in Papua New Guinea, so he went there, and he's been going there for about 40 years and mainly hanging out with this one community.
Cool.
Yeah, called the Kamula. And they're deep in the jungle in the Western Province. And you can't... There is a road there, but it's only come in the last, I think, 10 years. Before, you could only get there by canoe. But I was lucky enough to go with Dad at the end of last year, and... they were interested in meeting me, and I was interested in meeting them, and we hung out for about 3 weeks and danced together. And I didn't get to make sago because they didn't believe that my feet were tough enough. But
but maybe back like
I was like, look at these calluses, I can take it. But yeah, but no, it was wonderful. Mm-hmm. It was really wonderful.
And so instead of just understanding you as an individual meeting the individuals of that community, then this other study or question or thoughts are even broader about, like, you as a community, you as a member of Australia.
Mm.
With... like an Anglo heritage, and them as a community of a place that used to belong to Australia and now does not any longer. And like, I wonder at what point you decided to zoom out beyond just hi, myself. I'm Trish. Yeah, I'm Trish, and you're, I don't know any of their names, but
they have like. Sometimes they have English names.
All right.
Like Miranda.
Oh, great.
It was Miranda and Regina.
Yeah.
They were like my sisters.
And at some point you must have decided, okay, I know what this is between us, and we are sisters or whatever, and we can chat and dance. And then at some point it's like a zoom out to consider what that means in a bigger scale across nations and
geographies. I'm not sure I'm up to that, though. I feel like I'm still on the personal.
Okay.
Still trying to work out what my relationship is within their systems. So within their kinship systems and trade agreements and stuff. How I, even though I'm not blood related by any means, I somehow still have these relationships.
Kinships. A belongship.
Yeah.
Belonging. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if it's belonging, but it's a strong tie. A bit politically.
Does that come with obligations?
Yes.
That you are required to carry out?
It does. It does come with obligations. Like, if I get married, my husband is expected to give a payment of some description to the Kamula.
Okay.
And that's dependent on what my worth is.
Who decides your worth?
I don't know. I think that's a conversation between Dad and the Kamula men.
Right, the men decide.
The men decide.
Yeah.
Which white, middle class, independent woman.
Post-feminism.
Have a few kind of...
So you would you be happy for that discussion to happen if you were involved in deciding your value, and the women as well of the tribe, or like all of you sat down and decided your worth as a trade to outside of the...
It's not about my worth, perhaps it's about a gesture of gratitude.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
To the people that have looked after me.
It's interesting that in some cultures it goes the other way, where the family or the tribe will pay a dowry to the new husband.
Yeah, to set them up.
Yeah.
Well, they do that. Like, there's a pig there waiting for me. So it's getting fattened up, so it'll be slaughtered as my...
When? What's the timeline for the perfect
I don't know. It's quite small now.
Okay, so you've got so a few
I've got
years.
A little while. Thank God.
Some people are worried about their biological clocks. You're worried about the pig.
I'm worried about my pig being ready to feed a lot of people.
At the wedding.
Yeah, and it's called Sydney. It's important.
Oh.
It has like a location connected to it. It's quite important. So when they see Sydney, they think of me.
When they see the pig.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Sydney. Connected to you.
Yeah.
Great.
And there's a coconut tree somewhere as well. But there's also people... So the other thing about, I guess all of these things seem sort of small, but all together there's just something that's...
Yeah, it's a whole system that people live within and relate through.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people in... So they do have English names, but a couple of, have my name. Like, I have namesakes and... That was pretty crazy to go to this village in the middle of the jungle and somebody come up to me and go, oh, I'm Patricia. I'm your namesake. And you're like, amazing. You're the same age as me. Like, how did you? Crazy. And just her father has worked with my dad for a while and wanted to know about me. And it's a way of somehow, being woven into their culture as well as them being woven into mine.
And did you ever... What? I'm curious...
Yeah.
...to ask about...
Yes.
...the fact that... Well, what you were referring to about taking issue maybe a little bit with a bunch of men deciding your value.
Yeah.
And I wonder if other women who live there do... Or if you had conversations with them about...
Well, I don't speak the language yet.
Okay.
So that's something.
Yeah, lots of smiling and stuff.
There's a few of the women that speak English because the missionaries came through and they do learn English at school. So... And they did teach me some stuff. So the way it worked is I taught every morning and in the afternoon they would teach me...
Dance.
And I did some kind of weird yoga dance hybrid... thing.
Great.
And they would teach me their traditional dances on the basketball court.
Did they warm up for their dance? Was it weird that your dance that you taught had a warm-up element and theirs, did theirs also have a warm-up element?
Theirs had a preparation, like, in terms of getting ready and we wore, special headdresses and grass skirts and the women got ready together and got painted and things. Mm. It's amazing. And there were stories that went with that. But I also learned more about that side the following week when I hung out with a couple of the grandmothers. And they taught me the stories behind the songs and taught me the stories of how the beads that we wore were made and why they're made and what does it mean to put this on. And when do we wear these things?
And do you feel like you could, if one of them came here, that you would be able to say the same sort of things about the shit that we do every day? Like, this is the teacup and we usually put these kind of leaves in it and this is when we have tea and this is what it means to sit down and have tea.
Yeah, they have tea. Copious amounts of tea. But yes, as an example. Yeah.
Just because we don't, I guess...
I don't know. We talked about ATMs.
Or like this hat you wear when it's sunny, but this hat you wear when your head's cold.
I think on the last night we talked about ATMs and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And like why you would need that and all the cards. Like Dad pulled out all his cards and tried to explain why you would need this many cards and what they do.
Yeah.
And Hala, the father of the family, brought out his and it was this one giant, quite big... laminated card that showed that he was a member of the church and by having this card got him discounts on flights.
Wow.
But that's the only card you'd need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Church card.
Gets you through. But I, I don't know. Yeah, there would be things to share, of course. Like one of the guys, when I was growing up, Dad was working with a few of the men and needed to bring a couple of them back. And so they lived with us for a few months when I was a kid. And we took them to the Cannes show. And I have this memory of this guy Bacardia sitting with me in one of those, I don't even know what they're called, but they're like a big dish and they spin around and you're in a little capsule, and because it spins, all the weight goes to the outside. And I think I was only about 10, but I squashed him, so and he didn't really know what was going on. He was like, all right, we'll sit here. And I was like, sorry, I'm trying to get spun out. Yeah, and he kind of, yeah, and another guy talked a lot about how we didn't walk anywhere. Yeah, we always drove. Our feet didn't touch the ground. And he said that story when I was back. Yeah. But, and I also think in terms of, like, being my feminist reactions are a little bit naive, and that, you know, the roles of the women and the men are much more complicated than I realise, and that there is a lot more agency in their life. Like, it's not like they're without agency. It's just that it's different.
It's designated.
It's not designated. It's just different to us. I don't really know what you mean by designated.
That you do these things and however you see fit, and I do these things however I see fit.
But don't we kind of...
That would be designated. Oh, yeah, we totally still have that.
Yeah. But within that...
Like, is it up for question? I mean, I'm only asking because I know that... If your dad was to meet with your husband and decide on the value, then you would have something to say about that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So in this setup, in this time, it's completely... It's not even just up for question. It's all, it's like it is questioned. And I just wonder...
Yeah, well, I guess, like, they do... They do certain tasks. The women do certain tasks. The men do certain tasks.
That's the house I grew up in as well. Even within an Anglo cultural heritage setup, there would be different tasks designated to the genders of the children.
Maybe that's households rather than...
Isn't a village an extension of a household?
It's like just one giant household.
Yeah. Like, isn't that the idea that... We've actually lost a lot of things existing in households, whereas we used to exist in much more village-sized communities.
Well, I think maybe the houses are... So the houses are huge. Like, long houses are really giant.
In PNG.
Yeah.
In the village,
like,
yeah.
But now they don't grow... Like, they don't build them as big. Everyone has their own house, so they're smaller. And this idea of the individual is coming out more, I think. But they're still built in the same kind of design. You know, purely from trees and string and, like, bush. There's nothing metal about them. Except now there's, like, a piece of foil at the bottom of their fireplaces.
To stop fires?
Not foil, sorry, like metal. To sort of, like, keep it a bit safer.
Yeah. When your house is made of wood and you've got a fire in the middle of it.
Yeah, they have two. It's amazing. Mm. But lots of ventilation. Yeah. Anyway, PNG. Hopefully I'll go back next year.
So what happens at the end? When are you going to be done with...
Masters.
Yeah.
So my masters is less about PNG because I didn't get ethics approval.
Oh, no.
And more about me in relation to dance and archiving and reenacting. And then the PNG stuff plays a very small part in it for this time, and which isn't originally how I wanted it to be, but that's just what's happening. And it's probably good to have space to really understand the dance stuff, like we spoke about earlier. But, yeah.
But does that mean you're going to come out with some kind of really honed direction of choreographic inquiry?
I don't know.
Inquiry?
I feel like... Maybe. No. I don't think so, because none of us work like that, right? You don't have one... Or maybe you do. Maybe some people do. They have, you know, like a certain way of working that feeds them enough to sustain multiple works.
But not maybe the audience. It can't sustain the audience for multiple works.
But, no. I really like... What else have I been thinking about? Yeah, I've been reading about reenactments a lot. And the way that they kind of use... historical, like there's historical reenactments. There's also this really one, this amazing one that was part of Schindler's List, where Holocaust survivors actually worked in the movie and retold narratives.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought you were about to tell. I thought.
I know, you made a
that
face.
You were about to tell me. Because you know how in the States there's those. War battle reenactments.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So there's that. Absolutely.
I thought you were about to tell me a Holocaust version of that.
Oh, wow.
Where a whole bunch of survivors got together and got on a train.
Yeah.
And just did the old train ride that would have taken people to their deaths.
Yeah, I don't think they do the train ride.
No, that's probably
good.
They
work within, but it's similar, in terms of being back in that traumatic environment.
Wow.
And it's made to replicate. So I don't think it's in the same place.
And the viewers are... it's for viewers, not for the people doing it?
I think it's for... Well, originally it was for the movie.
Yeah, right.
And then they still do it as a way for them, I think, because it's really kind of important. I can't believe I forgot that the other day. Oh, all these things connecting later. I should have said that in Wollongong. Yeah.
I know.
Ah. I was too blown away by Peggy's generosity. Mm.
Yeah, I remember going to some events that have been reenactments of pioneer towns.
Mm.
And they do the old games like throwing the horseshoe to try and get it around a stick or the egg and spoon race or things like that. But, it's like a soft reenactment because there's not a facing of any demons.
No.
But there's somehow just the celebration activities. It's like what I finally was made aware of. There was a large push a few years ago about how incredibly healthy the Mediterranean diet was.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were like, every day I'm going to eat shitloads of oil, bread, pastas, bolognese can be top of my
olives.
List. Like roasted lamb.
Oh, yeah. That's
and delicious. And then I heard, no, that's all food for festivities. That happens two or three times a year.
Mm.
And the rest of the time is some nuts here and there, some very modest breads and seeds and some olive oil, but not shit same. Isn't fried in olive oil.
Yeah, or just soaked in it.
Yes.
Delicious.
Yeah. And it was really interesting, if we're talking about reperformance, even food gets reperformed as the cultural representation of that food, but it's always there. Feast foods, the fiesta foods.
Yeah. Fiesta.
Yeah, exactly. This is so much more delicious.
And now I'm allowed to do this.
It's healthy, Mediterranean food. I wonder if there'll be paleo recreation soon because the paleo diet is so big. And
maybe.
People.
Well, they're already telling it. That's the way they spin it, that it's what the cavemen used to.
Yeah, but I wonder if there'll be recreation. Events or parties, so you don't just get your paleo bliss ball, which is already weird, but you somehow everybody wears their animal skin and rocks up to eat the paleo food somewhere really cold and there's no heating.
Bummer.
Yeah, I know.
And with a giant turkey leg. You know those ones in America that are as big as your head?
Or the ones just in the Flintstones.
Yeah.
There'll be Flintstone reenactments.
Great.
So that people can get together and eat paleo. But they'll drive there.
Yeah, with their feet, right?
Yeah, with their feet.
Yeah. You have to build a car, a pebble car.
Oh, shit.
That would be excellent. We should do that party.
In the backyard?
Yeah, maybe. I'd like to own a pebble car. The only kind of car I could drive in Sydney. But there's also reenactments in visual arts as well.
Reperformance and stuff.
Yeah, and there's a bunch that are going on at the moment in Sydney in relation to a female performance theorist that came to Melbourne in the 70s, kind of revolutionised the art world here in Australia and, like, made a female art guild and things like that. And it got re-performed, I think, 2 weeks ago at Serial... No, not Serial Space, the art space in Woolloomooloo. I should know the proper name of that. And Marina Abramovich does it.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I was thinking about service before, because I was told that in an interview she said that she is giving a service. Her art is a service to the society that she lives in. And I was wondering if that's...
It's wanky.
Well, yeah. Yeah. That's what... I don't know what... I wonder if I can convince myself that my choreography is a service, or if I'm sitting on the privilege that I've been born into and then educated into, which is that I can do hobbies as a career. Like, those are the two extreme sides of it.
Yeah.
Is that either this is a thing that a lot of people see as a hobby and I want the taxpayer to fund me to do it professionally, or this is ultimately a service to society and the community and how we live and coexist together. And there's no more important thing that I could be doing to advocate for a better way to live and be and coexist than the considerations that I'm putting
forward,
whatever faculties that I've been born with, into.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how to convince yourself of either side.
Well, that last one sounded good.
It sounds nice, doesn't it? You're like,
yeah,
I'm serving.
Serving.
Just like the policeman code of, like, to serve and protect.
Yeah, I think it comes back to this thing of the individual and the collective, and that the idea that an individual can serve the masses, and I think that's kind of the wrong way to think about it. So, like, if you... Maybe Marina is right, it is about service, but maybe it's not about the idea that her service will fix or her service will shift the masses. It's like service will interact with each person in the way that they're ready to interact with it. And that's enough.
So as an individual, you can hope to serve other individuals.
Yeah.
And if everybody serves some people...
Then maybe, yeah.
Then we're a culture of service.
But the idea, if you put the individual in front of the collective, then that power balance is really weird.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what celebrity does. Celebrity propels. That's
exactly the power of celebrity.
Yeah, the individual over the collective.
But there's a great comic, and I forget who drew it, but there's a leader-type looking person who, of course, is a man in a suit, standing behind a podium, and he's standing on the end of basically a plank of wood. It looks like a plank, like if you walk the plank on a ship, and he's hanging over the edge of the cliff, but the collective, a whole group of normal people, are standing on the other end of that plank, and the comic is to say that actually we are the ones that give celebrity their power, and if we walked away from them, they would fall off the cliff.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. Yeah, cool. Well, then what do? You just get off social media.
I don't know. I feel like the channels are so noisy that it doesn't matter how much noise you make, you still can't be out ahead in front. But maybe that's based on my mindset of the class that I am in, because I don't think that I have the right or the ordained... faculties to lead everybody and think that I know better than they do.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, because, like, we have a political party that's there. We have, like, Prime Minister who's meant to lead.
Because he's prime. Yeah, he led himself all the way into representing women.
Indigenous affairs. Good one.
Yeah.
Good one.
Do you think he knows that it's a joke?
Oh, he must, right?
Being a white man with no track record of engaging in either of those things appoints himself as being in charge to represent women and Indigenous affairs.
I just actually don't know. I think he's conscious of how ridiculous that is. But I think as well as that, he has all the people around him are saying that it's okay, you can get away with that. And I think that is what's scary.
Yeah, right.
So there's nobody in the inner circle that's challenging. Or
he needs more people in his life that play the role that you do to me. Where I make a sweeping statement and you go, hang on.
I make sweeping statements sometimes too. I think we pull each other up.
Yeah. But maybe that's the great downfall of moderate people, is that they're too rational.
We're also artists, so I feel like
self-doubt's part of that.
Self-doubt's a little bit part of that, but also that we do allow ourselves to get swept up in ridiculous things and run with that for as long as possible. Like, that's kind of...
It's true.
The joy. A joy.
I wonder what you're chasing. If you're chasing after you finish chasing the finish of the masters, like to then go and facilitate the making of dance works on stage, or to choreograph the dance works for stage or not on stage, or to be asking people what the hell are they thinking when they put shit on stage.
No, I don't really want to be that person. I don't want to have
to. It sounds like it would be beneficial.
To who? I don't know. I think it's good to question. I think it's also really brave to put things up there. Yeah. And it takes a lot of work and a lot of trust and risk. And
true. And it's actually an anomaly if it's good.
Yeah.
Just getting it done is something already.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really important to see bad work as well as good work.
Yeah, as long as nobody's aiming to make bad work. Because I feel like bad work can happen accidentally or by itself.
Who would want to make bad work? Like, set out to make bad work?
I don't know.
I feel like that.
But I'm just questioning assumptions.
Yeah. No, what do I want to do? I want to do all of that. That sounds fun. That sounds super fun. Well, like, I want to keep building on the thing that I did at Critical Path. And work out what that is more for our, like, because I was working with Rhiannon and Cleo in a 4-week just space residency at Critical Path, and we were working on steps.
Cool. Because you're ahead of the curve.
Yeah. Oh, maybe. I don't know. Steps, and in reference to repetition and boredom and how you engage and where you find pleasure.
As the dancer or as the viewer?
As the dancer is where we were up to, for sure. And so together we would spend some time in the morning dancing, using different kinds of ways, but always starting with pleasure, always starting with what you wanted, what you needed, whatever it was, whether it was to just follow someone or copy something or, I don't know, anything. There were lots of things going on. And then to somehow choose these three moments within that dance, and to sort of take a bit more time to understand what they were, to be repeated and then to be shared, and then what is the language around that. And that was really fun because it became something other in the way that we described them to each other. And perhaps this didn't translate to the audience that I brought in right at the end. Poor things had to sit there for too long, but but there was something really great about that, and about these moments that became almost like their own worlds, and then what it is to situate these worlds against each other or alongside or done together. And because there was three of us, of course it becomes about, like, there's inherent spatial relationships that come. But I wasn't so interested in, yeah, I wasn't interested in what it was spatially, I guess. I was more interested in what the connections were between the three of us and the choices within that. And they're all very simple. I don't think I'm doing anything revolutionary. It's all been done before. But it's really nice to be... So this comes back to this idea of reenactment, that, like, it's one thing to hear about these things or to be in response to them because we've had a history working with other people, but we actually need to go back to the genesis and experience what that is to be able to make a different choice or to fully understand what that choice was and is and whether it's still relevant now.
Yeah, I question that about a lot of dance styles.
Yeah.
But I only feel invested enough or qualified enough,
yeah,
to approach it in a few.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe that's all you need, though. Mm. I think you need to do all of them.
No, but I mean, going back to the genesis and questioning their relevance.
Yeah.
That's super important.
Yeah.
And I would hope that all practitioners of every form,
yeah,
are doing this.
Hmm.
Because I know that in a lot of environments the market dictates, so if you're coding, then you need to constantly be going back and reviewing your system.
Yeah. And the system is changing.
And the system has to change because the other systems are changing.
Yeah.
But somehow there are time capsule systems that are still functioning as they always have.
Yeah, and there's a documentation process of what that shifting is.
Indigenous dance to ballet dance, I wonder about the genesis and the relevance to the people that were doing it within their time, and then the relevance to people today to do it or to watch it.
Mm. Yeah.
And don't feel that I'm qualified to approach either of those particular examples, but that I can... Maybe it's embodied. Like, I don't feel embodied in either of those, but I feel embodied within a certain style of contemporary dance. I feel embodied within a certain style of b-boying that I can find out more and then can merge that into my embodiment.
Yeah.
Whereas I would just be a complete mind-based consideration outsider for other forms.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah. And maybe that is what it's like for everyone. So when I pick on the poor philosophy student, I should remember that he's built from his context, which is sitting.
Yeah. Yeah, holy shit. I've been thinking a lot about being completely just products of our environment.
Yeah.
And that's what comes back to thinking about the privilege of your experience growing up and how that really sets you up. If you don't have everybody only has a very specific gamut of thought until they, and hopefully within that is the desire to have more, like extend that range. But if somehow it didn't filter in a desire to extend the range of your possible thinking structures, then maybe you're stuck.
Nah.
You're right. Yeah, let's be optimistic about this. Hopefully you're not stuck.
I don't think you're stuck. Well, you don't have to be stuck.
But this is what I wonder. Like, I really wonder if I was a man growing up in 40s Australia and I had assimilated to the role that I was in, that I had inherited.
Yeah.
Then would I even have the language within my mind to think about the feminist revolution? Would I have ever considered that? Like, not would I have considered, like, I guess it's about swimming.
Yeah.
In the end, that if you can't swim, you can't swim. Mm. You need to learn how to swim.
But that requires you to get in the water.
Yeah. But it also requires you to want to learn how to swim.
Unless you're in the water. So I think that the swimming example is quite good because it's like there's a choice to enter into the water or you're actually already in the water and you have to work out what to do.
It's true. And sometimes you just get forced into that water.
Yeah.
And if you don't learn in time, you just sink. And I think because of the research that I've been doing about blokes and Australian males as a stereotype and where the basis of that mindset and gender role came from, it really seems like as feminism came around, a lot of men sunk. Mm.
Mm.
Not because of being bad people, but just because of never... It's like how some people are fat children because they're raised on horrible foods and are never educated out of that.
But hold on, I'm a bit confused. So you're saying that from the rise of feminism, men sunk?
They were unable
to
even consider, let alone discuss, shifting roles, responsibilities, identities.
Mm. But that didn't necessarily equate to them sinking, did it?
I think I don't know enough about it yet.
Mm.
But yeah, I'm sure that a lot of times dysfunction is about an inability to adapt. If you're in a dysfunctional relationship, then someone's not adapting or can't adapt because it's
the wrong thing to do.
Exactly. And so you can leave it.
Can you? Yeah, then see, I think we're getting into things that we don't really...
Yeah. But then I wonder also about at what point something is not a big deal, and then if you leave it late enough in life, it becomes a big deal.
Like health stuff?
No, like driving. Like 16, 17, you learn how to drive, you hit a few things, doesn't matter because society's like, it's fine that you don't know.
Yeah, and then 30.
And then if you start, when you start much later, it's a big deal.
Yeah, my aunt never learned to drive. I don't really know why, but I couldn't imagine her trying now.
Hmm.
It's just a shame.
So that's what I consider when I think about class mobility or whatever, that there must be some point where actually it's not just up to your efforts.
No, it's definitely not just up to your efforts. In terms of class, in terms of minorities, and in terms of shifting power structures.
Mm.
No, it's not. Yeah. You're always in relationship to the structure. Even if it doesn't matter what class you're in.
Yeah.
The structure is always there. And I think I didn't realise that for about... only in the last 12 months I've gone, oh, shit.
I think I've been completely naive to it as well about choosing this life.
Yeah, choice maybe. And privilege. And
yeah, and then I'm incredibly privileged to feel comfortable enough
To choose this life.
Instability.
Yeah. I agree with that completely. Shit. And that's definitely a class thing.
Mm.
Because I know that... And maybe it's going to change in the next 5 years when we, think about having to think about other people, or having to be responsible for others. Whereas so far in my 20s, I haven't had to be responsible for anyone too much.
Mm.
Financially, specifically, I don't have very many financial obligations.
Yeah, and if you go without because of your choices, then it's fine.
Yeah.
But if you're asking others to go without because of your choices,
Or if you have a child and you're like, oh, okay. Damn. Yeah. Whereas my cousins are the opposite. They've made very specific choices to be comfortable, to be able to provide everything they need to for their family And that includes having a house, that includes having a dog, it includes every sort of social norm that you would imagine.
I'd like a dog.
Yeah, a dog would be cool, but I don't want to pay that price.
Yeah, right, the value, the price is too high.
Yeah, it is.
And that happens when everybody's chasing the same thing.
Yeah.
If we're talking about supply and demand, if you've somehow convinced most of the population to chase a house and two cars and a dog and maybe a boat.
Yeah.
And a couple of kids and hopefully a private school.
And don't question the work you do, just question, like, just be okay with what you can do with that money once you get it.
Yeah.
Once you do the work.
Then, of course, that's going to become out of reach in the end because everyone wants it.
Yeah.
The price will get too high.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just not also willing to... I don't have to, I guess, is the real answer. But I don't have to settle. I don't have to do work that I can't see why I'm doing it. And that's privilege.
Complete privilege.
It means that I'm pretty poor most of the time. Being here in Sydney. But that's the choice.
The privilege of chosen poorness.
Yeah, chosen poverty. Ah, bohemian life. Yeah.
And super catered to bohemian life,
yeah.
Because there's a whole bunch of people that want to enact bohemian life that have the cash.
Yeah, it's so
and
weird.
That groundswell produces environments and foods and events.
And chain stores.
And chain stores of bohemian aestheticized products that the shops still exist, even though we can only afford to shop there once a month or year.
Yeah.
Because they get supported by all the
people.
Phobos.
The Phobos! That's hilarious. Yeah.
Got any epiphanies to finish off with, Trish?
No.
Great. All right. Well, thanks.
Thanks. I hope there was something in there.
That's great. We should say goodbye, though.
Oh, okay. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.